Good morning. It's been a while. And now it's Sunday, October 8, 2023, and we are taking up the study of the nature of error. Why are we taking up this study? Because it's vitally important that we understand this. In the infinite way which we are all studying, there are specific healing principles, and two of them are in the nature of error. And if we don't learn these principles and practice them, anything at all can come along and flatten us and kill us. Well, we just had an example of that with the pandemic. And many of you know people that passed away from this disease. If you have these two principles and you're practicing them, it is said, "It shall not come nigh thy dwelling place." So let us learn these principles through this study. We'll have probably 14 weeks of it, maybe more. And the order of books, if you want to know, that I'm drawing from, hang on a second, I'll look it up. So, we are starting with The Master Speaks, and then we're going to The Early Years, and then a Joel Goldsmith Reader, and then The Art of Spiritual Healing, and then a parenthesis in eternity, and then beyond words and thoughts. We're going to look at the Kailua Study 1963 and the Kailua Study 1955. Then we're going to look at the Infinite Way, and again, beyond words and thoughts, and consciousness transformed, mysticism, the foundation of mysticism, and my own realization. So that's a lot of material to cover, and we're going to do it. So we start today with The Master Speaks, Chapter 4, Error. He begins with, "Meditation should result in the consciousness of the presence of God. This conscious awareness of the presence of God is the foundation of our entire experience. When we try to help ourselves or others through spiritual realization, it is the Christ that does the work. It is the Christ that dispels the illusion. It is the Christ that operates as healer, reformer, supplier. But what is the Christ? The Christ is our individual consciousness when that consciousness has been released from its fear, hate, or love of error." And you might say, when your conscious awareness is released from your fear, hate, or love of the world. Now let us put that into practical, usable form. Let us assume that there is a shadow on the wall. And you can look around and probably find one in the room you're in. As we look at that shadow, we can see that it is a shadow. And, of course, we do not hate it or fear it or love it. If I thought that that shadow were some kind of an evil presence, I might very well hate it or fear it. And if I thought it was a person, I might love it. Knowing it as shadow, however, I can neither hate nor fear nor love it. I look on it with complete indifference, knowing that its only existence is as shadow. Virtually nothingness without substance. Now listen up. When I am called upon for help, and I recognize that the problem, whether physical, mental, moral, or financial, has no more substance than that shadow, that it is not power, it is not presence, it is not reality, that attitude is what determines my healing ability. When I can face any form of disease, sin, lack, limitation, or even death, and take that same attitude toward it that I do toward that shadow, that no desire to erase it, no desire to wipe it out, no desire to get rid of it, or overcome it, or rise above it, no desire to deny it, but merely with the ability to look at it and say, "You are a shadow. So what?" Then harmony is revealed. We're not working on these shadows. We're living in spirit. That's what I wrote in the margin. So, if you can look at any form of disease with complete indifference, knowing it's a shadow, and then stand still, then harmony is revealed. We have nothing to offer the world except our ability to recognize the nothingness of error. In ordinary metaphysical practice, it is the habit immediately to deny the error. You remember this from the Kailua study series where he talks about not picking up the sword, not resisting? But in metaphysics, you make denials and affirmations. And so he says, it's the habit immediately to deny the error, if not in words, in thought. If not in thought, in attitude. A mental wall is built against it. But in this work, we reverse that. We do not put up any mental wall against a shadow. We are utterly indifferent to it. Divinely indifferent to it, if you will. We do not have to hate it, fear it, or love it, knowing that it exists only as a shadow, or of a belief, a mortal belief, a material belief, but having no more externalization or reality than that shadow. The shadow cannot be externalized into a reality. It can never be anything more than substanceless shadow. We cannot externalize an error. In our mesmerized state, in our hypnotic state, we may think we see a white poodle. We may think that we see a sin or a disease, or even that we feel one. But none of these errors has any existence as an externalized object. It has no existence as a thing. It has existence only as a substanceless belief, a shadow, or appearance in thought. Now that paragraph you need to work with. He's going to tell us that we need to practice this, to come into the conscious awareness that it's a shadow. The degree to which we can look at that shadow and not be disturbed by it, and not immediately have to say, there is no such thing, it does not exist in reality. The degree that we don't have to do that constitutes our degree of unfolded Christhood. There must be no resistance to evil, to error. Resist not evil. Since error is to be recognized as nothingness. But spiritual integrity for us consists in the ability to say to someone, I am with you, I will be with you. The I is God. It is effective if we are consciously aware of the nothingness and the no substance of error. So, part one. Work with these principles. Practice until you have no resistance to error. Until you don't start saying, grasping in your mind for a truth to meet this error. You start reaching for truth. Now, what is the truth? Oh, yes, this is a shadow. It's a nothingness. And so you're making these statements inside in your thought, but you're setting up a resistance. Don't you see you're battling it the minute you take thought? He told us to take no thought, and I know this is hard. I know this is difficult. This is why people don't like this subject. But we have to pass through this difficulty, this difficult part, in order to learn these principles, assimilate these principles, make them a part of our conscious awareness. Any church in the world, regardless of how orthodox it is, will agree that God is all. It also agrees that there is something besides God, yes, called Satan. In the metaphysical approach, people are even more ready to agree that God is all, but they also have something besides God, a claim or a belief. Both see something other than the allness of God. The Orthodox Christian with his allness of God is getting rid of a sin or disease. The metaphysician with his allness of God is getting rid of a belief or a claim. The name has been changed, and perhaps changing of the name has helped to lessen our fear of it. It seems to be much easier to handle a problem by knowing, well, this does not exist as a condition, it is merely a belief, suggestion, or appearance. But, you see, even in that recognition, there is still the allness of God and something. Let us, that's you and me, go one step further and come to the allness of God and nothing. We achieve that state of consciousness not by declaring the allness of God, but by understanding the nothingness of that which we are calling nothing. So our spiritual integrity, then, is made manifest in our ability not to resist error, not to declare against it, not to put up a mental wall against it, but in our ability to respond with an unconcerned, so what? It's a shadow. agree with thine adversary and resist not evil are used in the same sense in which we would say, when confronted with error, do not set up a mental wall against it. Do not set up a mental rebellion against it. Do not set up a mental denial against it. But learn to wait in silence. We prove our awareness of this, of the unreality, in the degree of our lack of resistance to them. Our lack of resistance. Our lack of opposites. Our lack of fighting them. The battle is not yours. Stand still and see the salvation of the Lord. As a matter of fact, we have to go the full distance and see that there are none against us, but that what appears to us as an enemy, in the form of sin, disease, lack of limitation, represents the universal sense which is always around us. I got a star next to this. The secret of healing work is found in this particular unfoldment, in this particular lesson. Our spiritual integrity lies in the degree of our awareness of the nothingness of what appears to be sin, disease, lack, limitation, and all the rest of the discords of human experience. We, however, must practice. We must develop the ability to look error in any form right in the face and not get this thinking process working, not permit it to engage in a campaign against error. Spiritual integrity demands that we develop the ability to sit back and agree with our patient and give the assurance, yes, I will be with you, I will be taking care of you. And certainly we will, and in no finer way than by not fighting the error. No resistance. You know, someone comes to you and says, I have a headache, I need your help, and you say, I will be with you, everything's fine. And then you hang up the phone or you close out the email and you sit back and immediately you look for a truth. Immediately you start saying to yourself, well, this is an appearance, this isn't real, this is, or whatever words you use. You're fighting right there, you're resisting. It has to be a life, a meditation, a prayer of non-resistance. The person of realized Christ consciousness removes the visible evidence of infection and contagion through his spiritual integrity, which consists of his awareness that God alone is power, soul, life, and that these other things called infection and or contagion are not power. Now, how do you get that spiritual integrity? You practice. You practice. Sometimes it's spontaneous, you know. Sometimes somebody says, I have a sore on my foot. I don't know where it came from. And you say, I'll help you. And you hang up and you forget about it. You're utterly indifferent to it, and you don't even know you're doing that. And you sit still and close your eyes, and wham, there's a strong feeling of the presence. You have just practiced the two phases, the two steps, and you didn't know it. And then the person says, hey, I don't know what you did, but it sure feels better. And you don't know what you did either. Because you didn't do it. Our understanding should include, above all things, the conscious awareness of God as the only power. That is the ability to say to Pilate, thou couldst have no power at all against me except it were given thee from above. Now he goes into malpractice. Malpractice is when someone's thinking evil thoughts, sending them your way. Malpractice is wrong thinking or evil thinking. In and of itself, it has no power, since we could sit all day long and say, "He is sick, he is sick, he is sick," but we could not produce a sickness with that erroneous thinking. If, however, we could induce a person to fear the malpractice, we could kill him with it. Interesting. So, if you fear it, it has power. You gave it power with your fear. The evil thoughts of individuals or groups are without power unless we individually and collectively give them power. It is an impossibility to give power to something without suffering from the belief that you yourself have accepted. Therefore, it is always your own belief that is malpracticing you, not somebody's thoughts about you. That's a line you need to highlight or underline or put a star next to it. It is always your own belief that is malpracticing you, not somebody's thoughts about you, so you malpractice yourself. From the moment of conception, everyone comes under the universal theological belief that the lifespan is 70 years and 10. At the same time, he also comes under the medical belief of a life expectancy of only 60 or 65 years. Now, those beliefs operate and they act upon us unless we ourselves consciously realize, now this is usually in italics in his other books, all power is in divine intelligence, divine love, the divine consciousness of my being. The place whereon I stand is holy ground, since God is the very mind and life of me. Therefore, no law acts upon me but my consciousness, which is the law unto all creation. Nothing can affect me except in the degree of my reaction to it. It is not it which has power. It is my reaction to it that has power. Now we're getting into the real principle. Your reaction. It's your reaction. If you're like me, you sit down and immediately truths pop into your head with which to meet it. And like Virginia Stevenson said once, they're like cars on a track. Don't get into one. Let them go by. Don't grab one like a life preserver. The mental thoughts are not power. Joel draws that example of building the best atomic nuclear fission bomb you ever heard of. Build it in your mind and throw it at the front door, and nothing happens, because thoughts are not power. However, if you react with hate or fear or love of error, then that reaction is power to you. Let's read a little more about reaction. It is our reaction to every person, circumstance, or condition that is power. It is our reaction to it that gives it power. There is where the power lies, in our reaction to it. If a person can learn to be governed by the divine consciousness of his being, he will not react to anything in the external. There is no power reaching me from outside my consciousness, no good power and no evil power. If we can see that disease is not a power acting upon us, but that it is a belief to be disregarded like a shadow on the wall, then we become the law unto that shadow, and it can do nothing to us. So it's in your reaction. If you sit down and the truths pop into your head and you refuse to grab onto one or get into one and just sit in silence, you can say the word shadow or not. But become completely indifferent to it and sit in the silence, God will appear. God will reveal itself to you. God will be on the scene. If we see, well, he says, most of the major books of the Infinite Way contain chapters on the nature of error. There are people who object to this emphasis on the nature of error. Most truth students like to say, well, it's not real, so why bother about it? Years of practice, his practice, years of practice, however, have revealed that if we do not bother about it, it will be bothering us. It is only in the degree, not of our neglect of it, but of our understanding of it as nothingness, that we are freed from it. To look error squarely in the eye and say, I know you, you are shadow, is awareness. That is understanding. That is facing the situation. We get into the habit of saying, there is no disease, there is no sin, oh, it's not real. That does not do anything for us. If you're not having results, that's the reason. The secret of healing is reaction. The thing that helps is to come into an actual awareness of the unreality of error and to realize why it is unreal. What makes it unreal? Our reaction to it is where the training comes in. Not in doing something to error, but in developing our reaction to it, to the place where we can actually look at it and say, thank you. You're a shadow. All of this leads us to that point in which there is no mental resistance to error. There's the principle. We are developing ourselves to a point of non-resistance to error. And how do you develop yourself to that point? You practice. A human being will never be spiritual. A human being will always be a human being until the spiritual nature of his being wipes out the human being. And divinity itself becomes apparent. Again, I am repeating, he says, watch that you do not immediately react and try to deny or overcome or resist error. But in the presence of any phase of error, be quiet and listen for the unfoldment or revelation of truth to come through to replace the erroneous appearance. In the presence of any erroneous situation, try to do no thinking, but do a great deal of listening. Take the listening receptive attitude. So, that's principle number two. Principle one is no reaction, completely indifferent. Principle two is do nothing. Listen. Be still. Be silent. Let God reveal itself. When we come to this place in thought where we do not start denying the shadow, but where we know the unreality of all forms of sin, disease, and death, and know that they in and of themselves have no power and can do nothing to anybody except in the degree of our reaction to them, then we have come to the Christ. Regardless of what my needs may be in life, whether that need be for a dollar bill, a taxi, an automobile, a home, a wife, companionship, opportunity, business, or an employer or employee, it is the Christ that will produce it. The Christ is omnipresent. Okay, listen up. The Christ is omnipresent, but it is the degree of my conscious awareness of the Christ that will provide for the need. The degree of my conscious awareness of the presence of God will appear as whatever thing or person is necessary in my experience. So principle number one, no reaction. Principle number two, conscious awareness of God. Here and now God is. Where I am, God is. All that God hath is mine. But none of that knowledge is of benefit to anyone in the world, except in proportion to his conscious awareness of that truth. It is possible to have all the God there is in the world and yet get sick and die, unless we have the absolute conscious awareness of the presence of the Spirit. He's going to tell you how to get that in a minute. Ever since our beginning as human beings, we have not had that conscious awareness of the presence. Even if we have been voicing it, even though we have been saying, oh, God is everywhere. God fills all space. God is everywhere. Yet we have had sin, disease, lack, limitation. All the while we have been making those statements, showing that the statements are mere statements and not a matter of conscious awareness at all. As statements, they are of absolutely no value. But to have the conscious awareness of those statements makes it a different story. In that awareness, I do not have to fear sin or disease or anyone's calculations or miscalculations. As I learn to cultivate the listening receptive ear, as I develop this ability through practice, this power of silence, as I maintain the mood of expectancy within my silence and my stillness and receptivity, all of a sudden I feel something, which is like a deep breath or a sigh, or it may come in some other form, because to each one God appears in an individual way. For me, it's a tingling sensation on my arm, or the side of my face, or the top of my head, or my leg. Sometimes the Spirit draws a picture, but 99 times out of 100, it appears to me only as a little gasp, almost a deep sigh. And when that happens, it is as if my whole body and arms were just being filled with a soothing warmth flowing through, or a warm stream of water coursing all through my body. It is the conscious awareness or feeling of the presence of God. It may be a light tingling sensation, but more often it is just this little sigh. Now, that to me is conscious awareness of the presence of God. That is God announcing itself, declaring its presence, or making me aware of its presence. That is God's way of telling me that I am on the beam and all is well. Now, I'm going to point something out to you, ladies and gentlemen. Number one, in our indifference and our lack of resistance, fighting or denying error, we are doing nothing of ourselves. We are simply indifferent to it and standing still. In our silence, God announces itself. So in your facing error, you don't do anything. You don't deny it. You don't affirm against it. You don't build up a wall. You don't resist. You don't declare. You stand still and do nothing. And in this second part, in your silence, God announces itself, declaring its presence, making me aware of its presence. That is God's way of telling me that I am on the beam and all is well. So, in your response to error, you do nothing personally. And in your silence, to become consciously aware, you do nothing. You stand still. So, it looks like you're going to do nothing, and yet you are doing something. You are seeing through the shadow and coming into the conscious awareness of the presence, you see? There's two parts. Both have to be included. Now, he says, then watch the miracle. Watch Spirit perform all the functions of my existence and yours. It is the Spirit that performs all healing work. It's merely my ability to sit and become one with the Father, and then let the infinite invisible Spirit appear as whatever healing or corrective influence may seem to be necessary. See, you're not personally denying error, you're not personally affirming God. You are shutting up. you are being still. You are listening. You're receptive, and you receive Him. Once this Spirit is made manifest, it will appear as whatever the need of the moment may be. It may be dollars, it may be a home, it may be a book to write or to purchase, it may be a teacher to find. Whatever need appears, The fulfillment appears soon after the realization, recognition, or feeling of the presence has been made manifest. The Spirit of God appears tangibly as form, or rather, let me put it this way. The consciousness of the presence of God, the presence of Spirit, appears tangibly as form. The Spirit was there all the time, but it did not do anything. It was the conscious awareness of it that brought the results. Now, conscious awareness is not thinking. Do you get that? Conscious awareness is not thinking. Statements of truth. In his case, conscious awareness is that feeling of warmth or that little sigh. He's released. He can feel it. He sighs. In my case, it's that tingling feeling that lets me know, God is on the field. God is here. Omnipresence. That's right. In your case, it may be something else. But that's conscious awareness of the presence, not the thinking. It's not the thinking you do. It's not, well, God is the only presence. God is omnipresence. God is on the field. That's thinking. And that has no power, just like the thinking of error has no power. So, you develop through practice this ability within yourself to know that's a shadow. And then you practice the ability to stand still until this presence announces itself. See? Consciousness, or the conscious awareness of the presence of Spirit, appears in tangible form. In the morning, therefore, before you leave your home, wait until you have felt that little answering click that says to you, I am on the field, I go before you. It does not have to say those words to you, but it means exactly that. I will go before thee and make the crooked places straight. I will take care of all the problems of the day. That conscious awareness of the presence of God appears as every phase of harmonious experience throughout the day. Not the thoughts, the conscious awareness, the feeling. However, because of the hypnotic influence of universal thought and belief, it is necessary that we establish and reestablish our conscious awareness of the presence over and over again. Now, Joel tells us in his later books that the time comes, the moment comes, where this presence takes over. And you don't have to so much practice anymore because it is living you. But here, at our phase, we have to practice. It is necessary, he says. Go back and get the feeling again in the afternoon, if you can, and do not retire without it at night. Never retire without it at night. If we were to stay awake 24 hours a day in the conscious awareness of the presence of God, the body would go on functioning with the same regularity and ease. When you attain the sense of God's presence, this click, before you retire, you may sleep or you may not sleep. Does not make any difference. But if you sleep, it will not be an unconscious sleep. It will be a lying back in bed and resting of the body, but the consciousness will be functioning, even though to appearances you are asleep. Yes, that's when I get those dreams that teach me something, because consciousness is continuing to function even though the body is resting. And when you practice this, you'll find more and more your awareness will expand at night. So he says, establish the conscious presence of God before you retire, just as you do before you go out in the morning. And then you will find that your nights can be just as successful and profitable and enjoyable as your days. Be sure to see this. The Christ, Truth, Divine Consciousness, the conscious awareness of the presence of God appears as very tangible form. Therefore, it does not make any difference what the need is or what the occasion is. Let the Spirit do it. Let the Spirit perform it. Now, let's read this last bit here. In your final stage of meditation, do not think any thoughts. Simply realize that God, Spirit, is omnipresent as your own being, and that your consciousness of this truth brings forth the Spirit in whatever form is necessary. So that is his chapter, and the first chapter that we're starting with, on the nature of error. Now, later in some of these other books, he will tell you that you can give it any name you like so long as it means nothingness to you. Now, I didn't like that arm of flesh. It didn't mean anything to me. So I had to come up with my own. And what works for me is this shadow. I like it because there's a shadow off the lights onto the ceiling in this room that where I meditate and talk to you. And I can see the shadow, and I can see it's a nothingness. And so I like that. I like appearance. I like world mind, a mind thinking about the world. But I like shadow. Right now I'm working with that. Because it means nothing. That's a nothing. It can't get off the wall. It can't become three-dimensional. It's a shadow. It's a nothingness. And so I like that. So pick any name you'd like. You pick it. Something that means nothingness, so that you can begin to practice. And when you sit down, we get people requesting help online all the time. And when you read one and you say, I am with you, or whatever it is you say, remember, your term for nothingness. I would sit down and say shadow, and then I'm done with it. That's it. Completely indifferent. And then I would stand still. I would stop. And listen. And be receptive. In the silence, for the presence to announce itself. And when it does, and I feel it consciously, and I'm consciously aware of it, my work is finished. And that conscious awareness of the presence will appear tangibly in some form of harmony. Now, we have wars and we have rumors of wars circulating around. I would like to have you practice with me these principles we have been discussing. definitely at 11 o'clock on Sundays, Sunday mornings, 11 o'clock my time. But any time that you can, it doesn't have to be then. Do it whenever you can. Do it at 11 o'clock your time. And maybe we can recognize this is a shadow. I will be still about it. I will listen. Father, you speak. Reveal thyself. Reveal thy presence. Let me be consciously aware of thy presence. And there it is, the presence of the living God, or ye are the temple of God living. And so I rest in it. And then I get up and go about my business, whatever my business is. If you have questions, don't be afraid to post them to the group. Others may have your same questions. Then it's important that you understand this simple meditation. It's important that you understand the whole secret is not reacting, not resisting, not putting up a mental defense or a mental wall, not affirming, not denying, not resisting. He gave it to us. Resist not evil. And so that's what we're going to practice, resisting not, not reacting. And then the second part of waiting upon the Lord, listening, receiving. And then when we feel the presence, we rest in it. Thank you, Father. And then we get up and go about our business. He says we should start our day with this. We should have a couple of times during the day. We should have one period before we retire. And anytime somebody presents a problem or we see a problem on the street or hear about it on the news, we need to practice these principles. These are the healing principles of the infinite way. And I didn't know it. I didn't understand it. I wasn't ready for it. And so I couldn't practice them for many years. I was like Joel talks about. God is all. God is everywhere. This problem is nothingness. But that was all mental. And that itself was a mental resistance. This is so subtle. So fine. So gently we have to approach the throne of God. So do not be afraid to post a question or post it to me privately, and I will answer the best I can. But by the time these 14 weeks or more are up, we should understand this process enough to practice it daily. You should all be healers when we finish this course. I want to thank you for listening, for drawing this out in just this way. It's good to be with you again. And so, thank you. I love you.